And now for reading and writing and radio.
When I leave home to walk to school, Dad always says to me, "Marco, keep your eyelids up and see what you can see." Now, what can I say when I get home today? All the long way to school and all the way back, I've looked and I've looked and I've kept careful track, and all that I've noticed except my own feet was a horse and a wagon on Mulberry Street. That's nothing to tell of. That won't do, of course, just a broken-down wagon that's drawn by a horse. That can't be my story. That's only a start. I'll say that a zebra was pulling that cart. And that is a story that no one can beat when I say that I saw it on Mulberry Street.
That storyteller is in Dr. Seuss's book, "And to Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street." But it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
When I say that I saw it on Mulberry Street. Well, I don't live on Mulberry Street, but on North 5th in Springfield, and there are some pretty interesting sights on North 5th Street without having to make up zebras and elephants and charioteers and airplanes dropping confetti as Marco does in his imagination. To start with, there's the house right across from us. It's a huge pile of brick with little turrets and balconies and roof walks and decorated cornices and knobby chimneys that stick way up. A real Dr. Seuss illustration. It's such a crazy pile of brick that people slow their cars down to look at it, and they're so busy looking that way that they don't see our house, which is quite a crazy pile of brick in its own right, with squashed portholes under the roof for attic windows. The house across the street has stories about it, the main one being that President Teddy Roosevelt was going to have lunch there when he visited Springfield some 75 years ago, and they had the whole place elegantly redecorated. Gold leaf on the embossed ceilings, very expensive, exclusive Tiffany glass installed inside. And then something happened, and Teddy Roosevelt never did come. Well, when we moved into it, that house was moved across the street from it. That house was Vansel's funeral home. And one of its interesting inside features is that down in the basement is the oven in the wall where they used to cremate the bodies, sort of like the witch's oven in Hansel and Gretel, but without the gingerbread. But then Vansel's moved to the south side of Springfield, and that new Vansel's down there is an interesting place, too. As I hear the story, old Mr. Vansel refused to move out of his house to make way for the new building, so they built the new funeral home all around his house. And you can see the old roof poking up out of the middle of the modern building down there on South Grand. Maybe that's not a true story, but I've always found it interesting. Well, the house across the street became Gateway House. Some of you will have heard of Gateway or even visited it, for busloads of school kids pull up every now and then and have a tour and a talk. And what's the talk about? It's about drugs and their dangers and how you can get off them once you get hooked. For Gateway House has some 60 people. They call each other sisters and brothers, and so do I. Most of them are young, and they live there. And all of them are drug addicts who are learning to live without drugs. It's a re-education center. People who come to Gateway come because they really want to get over their dependence. They're often in trouble with the law, too, for it takes a lot of money to support a drug habit, more than most people have. And so they've stolen or committed other crimes. But Gateway gives the brothers and sisters a chance to get off drugs, to learn how to stay clean, and that gets them straight with the law. Well, today isn't a program on drug addiction. I'm just telling you that I have something pretty interesting on Mulberry Street. Here's what I saw one Christmas. I heard a big hullabaloo out in the street, and I looked outside, and here was a person from Gateway, a big black man, one of the brothers that was living there, and he was dressed up in a Santa Claus outfit with the red hat and the suit and the black boots and the beard and so forth, and he was standing out there on the street, and he was waving his arms, and he was going, ho, 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 and all the cars going down the street were honking their horns and enjoying seeing him, and everyone was having a good time. Well, while I watched, a car stopped right in front of him, and what should leap out of the car but a person dressed as Santa Claus, a white man dressed as Santa Claus with the red suit and the hat and the white beard and the boots, and he ran around in front of his car, and the man dressed as the black Santa Claus and the white Santa Claus embraced each other and clapped each other on the back and ho-ho-hoed, and all the cars stopped and honked, and it was a fun and a funny sight. Here's something else I saw about a year ago. And my mind flashed in horror, because when I looked out one night, I saw somebody hanging from the balcony by a rope. And I thought, oh, good Lord, some person, poor person over there, has found life so terrible that he's committed suicide. And I was rushing to the phone when my daughter Ellie yelled in disgust, hey, Mom, it's Halloween. And so I went out a bit sheepishly, and sure enough, it was a stuffed dummy that was hanging up there in the moonlight from the catwalk, slowly, slowly swinging around. Well, what else in my neighborhood is there that's interesting? There's the Art Association. It's kitty corner across the street, and it has wide lawns and lots of bushes and trees, and among them is a ginkgo tree. Now, a ginkgo is an imported tree that's taken root in America. It's huge, very black-ridged bark, has dainty fan-shaped leaves. They're unlike any other leaf you've ever seen, and these turn bright yellow in the fall and drop all at once overnight, and the ground is then a ginkgo carpet. But you don't want to lie on it, for the ginkgo fruit is round and mushy, a little bit bigger than a crab apple, and it stinks. The pit is very pretty, though, if you can stand to get to it. It's pale yellow with a little ridge around it. I usually say hello to the ginkgo when I go past it. I say, hello, ginkgo. And then, so that the buffalo's feelings won't be hurt, I also say hello to him. Hello, buffalo. Now, the buffalo is a statue made entirely of car bumpers, the smaller rounded bumper parts, so that the buffalo seems to have a skin like a turtle, all in rounded plates. But on this buffalo, they do look buffalo-y. The creature is all shiny and as big as a real buffalo and stands there with his massive head down. Last year, they were doing some masonry work at the Art Association, and some worker must have poured a little wet cement from a height and then let that plop harden and put it right behind the buffalo. For there it was one day and stayed there for several months, a statue buffalo chip. Now, I'm not sure how realistic it was, because I'm not used to buffalo droppings, but it sure looked just like what we called on our farm cow pies. Somebody finally must have taken it away, because it's gone now, but I sure enjoyed it while it was there. It added a touch of realism to that metal buffalo under the ginkgo tree. We have something else I love in our neighborhood, and that's the old brick sidewalks. Mostly they've been replaced, but every so often there's a long stretch of red brick. Some of it's pretty overgrown with a kind of furze that creeps in from the edges. I run every morning, and I love running on the brick. I go out of my way to find the sidewalks that are brick so that I can run on them. And I love the patterns of the brick. Some of the sidewalks are laid in ordinary fashion like a brick wall, and some are laid two straight and one across, and some are laid two one way and then two the other way. Some are in herringbone pattern, that's a sort of a crisscross pattern. But whether I walk or run, I'm aware of those bricks under my feet and the interesting patterns that they're laid in. I didn't always live in a town. I grew up in the country, as most of you know, on Collie Road, and our neighborhood was very large. You consider neighbors people who live miles away from you when you're out in the country. And there was lots of interest in our country neighborhood. On our own farm, for instance, there was always the farm work to watch or even help with. The cows got milked, the milk got bottled, the bottles got loaded into the milk trucks and taken to town. The pigs got poured their swill, the calves got buckets of milk with the rubber tits sticking out of the bottom. Horses got curried, there were always fences being mended and building going on and crops being planted, hay being cut, silo being filled. and out in the pasture was a creek, so there was water to wade in or skate on in the wintertime, and nearby woods with trees to climb. But I knew quite early that town was interesting, too, for sometimes I'd ride along. If the milkman had a bum leg or something, then I'd go along to help run and carry the milk up to the houses. And this would allow me to meet every dog in town, and to go into people's yards, to their back doors, often into their kitchens, because people would want you to leave the milk in their refrigerators if they weren't home so that it wouldn't spoil. I became an authority on interesting kitchens, which were and which weren't. And being the curious sort, I'd usually take a fast peek into the room next to the kitchen, or into the basement on my way out. And so I saw all sorts of marvels. The elaborate train city set up, the wood carving, the quilt being made, the miniature bottle collection, a parrot who screeched at me. And of course, there were the people who were home. Sometimes they'd give me a cookie or actually invite me in to see the train city, and then the milkman would wait patiently in his truck and catch up on his route books. I'd follow him, too, when we went through our town's shoe factory, peddling milk to the people that worked at the machines, and I'd see the huge machines that cut out the toes and so forth of the shoes, and then I'd see the women sitting at their great sewing machines stitching insoles, and I found the factories fascinating. So I knew that there was always something interesting in the country and in the town, but I wasn't so sure about the city, the real downtown city, until after, when we were married and had several little children, we rented an apartment over a store for a year in a big city, right downtown with the sidewalks all the way to the curb and the used car lot across the street whose light revolved and flashed, first a red beam and then a white beam into our living room all night long, like a lighthouse or like a cop's car. And I had three little children and was rather discouraged with no schoolyard nearby for us to play on. But I set off with stroller and toddlers that fall to see what we could find of interest, and hooray, the city turned out to be interesting, too. We found a lumber yard in the next block, where they didn't mind if we wandered in and out and through the stacked lumber, and there was a mountain of sawdust where we could play, and a heap of wooden scraps where we could build with all sorts of odd and interesting shaped blocks and curls. And then we found a tiny yard of an old woman who had crammed it with sunflowers growing, nothing but huge, tall sunflowers, and I'd sit on her step and talk to her while the girls played in the forest of the stems. Can you imagine getting lost in a couple of square feet? And then in our own backyard, which was also no bigger than a postage stamp, we discovered we had a famous grapevine growing on the fence, and all the Armenians in New Haven came and plucked grape leaves off it for making a certain dish where rice and meat were wrapped up in grape leaves and baked. Our vine, apparently, had especially tender and tasty leaves, and we found out this was true when one Armenian family let us taste the result and then gave us the recipe. And in the building behind us, there lived a professional beggar. I've always thought that beggars were destitute wanderers, and some I'm sure are. But this man, who was in a wheelchair, for he had lost both his legs, he had his apartment, and his wife had a job somewhere, and he had his beggar's license and his own corner downtown where no other beggars were allowed by law to beg, and he'd roll there every morning and put in his hours 9 to 5 sitting on a rug. I think he'd hide the wheelchair because I never saw it. And he'd sell pencils and candy and talk to his friends about the world situation, and then he'd put his day's money into his bank account and roll home to supper and sometimes talk to me over the fence. Well, I could tell you about many more of the neighborhoods that I've lived in because we moved around quite a lot before we came to Springfield, but what about yours? I spoke of buffalo chips. Chatham, I know, has its own cow chip throwing contest every year, and that must be interesting, though how they get their cows to manufacture the chips to size specification so that a competitor with a heavier chip won't have the advantage in a high wind, I certainly don't know. Will you tell us, you kids from Mrs. Goodwin's and Kennedy's and McGill's fifth grades? And you kids around Lake Town and Hazel Dell in South Springfield, you have that deserted, rusting caboose in the Christmas tree forest, where the trees have gotten so tall and bushy that they wouldn't fit in anything but an ogre's castle. And I know that there are scary local legends about that caboose and about that forest. And you kids at Pleasant Hill on the far east side, what about that whole huge forest of wilderness several blocks wide on Clear Lake with a house hidden somewhere inside? How many of you have stood with your nose inside that fence, straining your eyes, as I have, to see what you could see? And those of you at City Day, last year, across the street at the Springfield Theater Guild, when I was running through the side yard, I squashed a few ginkgo-like fruits under my feet. But in picking them off my Nike treads, they didn't smell bad. So I investigated, found that I was beneath my first persimmon tree, and I was enchanted. I gathered a capful of the squashy fruit, found a recipe, and made a terrific black walnut and persimmon cake. And while on interesting trees, those of you that live out near Lincoln Gardens, you have the only Kentucky coffee tree in the area. I know, because Elspeth, my daughter, had a tree unit in biology and was supposed to get a leaf from one. It became a real treasure hunt. We consulted more and more tree experts, and we finally tracked it down, quite literally beating through the brush with the tree book and a map of Lincoln Gardens held in front of us like a beacon. And Ellie took one leaf to school, but I framed the other one. So I know for sure that whether you live in Verdon or Taylorville or Pleasant Plains or Decatur or Springfield or on a farm somewhere, you have interesting things in your neighborhood, because there isn't a single neighborhood that doesn't have interesting things in it. What's there to tell about? The obvious things, the sort a tour guide would show you, like Gateway House of the Art Association on my street. But you can be the tour guide for the less obvious things. The patterns of the sidewalk bricks, the wasp's nest under the eaves, the woman down the street who has 80 cats in her house. Yes, there's one in Springfield, and she's known as the Cat Lady, and her house doesn't smell either. Think of her kitty litter bill. Or the man building a huge boat in his barn, as our neighbor did. He now has it moored out on the Mississippi, and he's building huge dollhouses now with individual shingles and wallpaper with tiny patterns and electric lights smaller than your little fingernail. Then there are the secret places that only you or maybe a friend know about. Not just the scary spots like the caboose, but the enchanted places where you go to be alone when you're feeling very glad or very sad. Here's a few hints about interest. Agatha Christie said in one of her mystery books, "It is completely unimportant. That is why it is so interesting." So don't shun the unimportant things, the ginkgo trees, the plain horse and wagon. You can make them interesting. Because if you yourself are interested, then you'll make them interesting to other people. That's the very first requirement. And you won't find out much by sitting before the TV. So get outside, take a walk, take a run, take a prowl around your neighborhood. Look, listen, touch, sniff, say hello, ask questions, keep your eyes bright and your tail bushy. For if you have dull eyes, dull ears, nose, brain, then life is going to be dull and boring. And it's okay, of course, to buzz things up with your imagination, but what I would tell Marco is to go out and investigate that plain horse and wagon. Talk to the driver. Find out what truly makes those things interesting. Then, Marco, you'd be able to rush into your house, and when your father says, "Was there nothing to look at? No people to greet? Did nothing excite you or make your heart beat?" Then you could answer with real enthusiasm, "And to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street."
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.